And then there's the Ramsar Management Authority.
Is that Nicky Robinson?
No, that's Gareth Jeffries and Paul Chambers. Paul Chambers is Fisheries.
Okay.
And so it'd be interesting to get a take from him wearing his Fisheries hats.
Mm-hmm.
But the Ramsar Management Authority also incorporates fishermen, the Minkies Residents Association, the Ekrahos, Jersey Seafaris, so there's a lot of marine related organisations that all come together under the umbrella of the Ramsar Management Authority.
Okay, so that's Ramsar Management Authority.
Yeah.
Is that
RMA?
RMA. Is that for Jersey?
So, yeah.
And then do they have their own website where it can sort of find us out then?
Yes, I think so. And failing that, I will forward you links or whatever.
Oh, okay. Thanks very much.
But yes, because Dave Cabaldew, well, they seem to have accidentally, deliberately dropped him off the mailing list. He's been on it for quite a while.
Yeah.
And basically, if you embarrass them too much by pointing out failings, you get sent to the naughty corner. Because they're all funded by government,
mm-hmm.
And one of the big fights that we're actually having internally with them at the moment is the pollution down at the Elizabeth Marina, the Horizon pollution.
Yeah. And is, would you say that's, would you, do you feel it's on, like, still going then?
Oh, yes.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. We are absolutely certain that a year on, that development site, the Jersey Development Company site, is still releasing pollution.
Even after they got fined?
Oh, Legendre, the contractors, were fined £10,000. The environment protection people and the planners deliberately made sure that that case stayed in the magistrates' court, because the maximum fine the magistrates' court can impose is £10,000.
Mm. So, were you hoping still more like whatever, like judiciaries here or judiciary mainland?
We were actually hoping that the Jersey Development Company was going to get taken to court, and that this was going to highlight massive failures and possible negligence within the planning system.
Okay. I'm smiling a bit because this is more content to put in, if you're wondering.
Yeah. No, but I mean, instead of that,
yes,
they hatched up a wonderful plot whereby Legendre got fined £10,000. That £10,000 will have gone on as extras on an invoice to Jersey Development Company, who will have happily paid it.
Very interesting.
It's very incestuous, but I mean, my background is property and property management. I'm a surveyor, so that's what I did my degree in. Uh-huh. And I know how the projects work. I know how they interact, sort of thing.
Okay, so would you say at the moment you're probably more concerned about the issues at the waterfront than maybe like reclamation on at La Colla at the moment?
No, it's all ties in together.
Okay.
When a friend of mine who's a surveyor, and he did a lot of the early groundworks, as it were, before La Colette was built and before West of Albert reclamation. And amongst other things, they were advised by both Dutch and Americans that the way they were planning on building it, with porous walls, was no longer sort of the best thing. It wasn't, you know, it had been outmoded and outdated, but it was cheap. So if you're going to pile a whole lot of toxic waste, if you put it into sealed cells, then, you know, it's pretty much secure. If you just pack it in layers behind a porous wall, well, hydraulics still work. The water goes in, the water goes out.
Yeah.
Anything soluble over time will get dissolved and will get flushed out. You've got rainwater, so that's naturally percolating down. You know, if you know the basics, it was pretty damn sure that it was going to happen, that pollution was going to be the result.
Yeah, and as well, thanks to Dave, when I had that short discussion with him, he was able to tell me that the issue they put, was it ash? What's it?
Fly ash.
Yeah, that's it, to use for, that was like the groundworks that they use.
Basically, the reclamation sites in Jersey are best described as toxic waste dumps.
Right.
And because no one, because no one was managing or recording where things were dumped, so there is no, short of actually digging the entire reclamation area out,
yes,
and processing it, there is no way of establishing what is where and taking mitigation or remediation actions. I mean, one of the best photographs taken when they were building the, I think it was the second or the third finance centre building.
Yeah.
And there's a JCB with a huge bucket full of what looked like bandages and things.
Yeah.
This is actually asbestos bandage, because old central heating, well, industrial things, you had almost like a plaster cast, old-fashioned plaster of Paris bandage. Well, it was a similar thing with asbestos. And there's a lorry load of this stuff. And there's another classic photograph that was taken showing half a dozen state's employees in protective suits on a nice windy day. And just the other side of the plywood hoarding, there were mothers with children in prams walking by with no protection whatsoever.
That's quite shocking.
Yes.
That is very shocking.
As a visual image, it's...
Yeah. And there's that's the finance centre that's just beside the Liberation Station?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Which, again, is on the reclaimed land. Yeah.
Exactly. If you could... Do you have those photos then?
I'm sure... Well, I know where they came from, so yes, we can arrange access. Yeah.
Because they're very good to sort.
And again, that's the sort of thing... that's where Dave Cabaldew is better, because he sort of maintains the archive for our shoreline Jersey.
Yeah.
The other source of a lot of this information is JAG, the Jersey Action Group.
I haven't heard about them.
Right. I'll send you a link to
Thank
them.
Thank you very much. Yeah, that's good.
They were originally the Waterfront Action Group. They were fighting the whole development down there on various levels, but one of them being environmental grounds. When you carry out an old-fashioned layer cake landfill, especially if you're using toxic material, and especially if you're in an area where the tide goes in and out. So you start off, in fact, I think, do stop me if you already know this, I think I've drawn a picture of this just recently for someone. Damn, there must be another one. Another notebook, but it's I shall do it all over again, because it's a very useful aid memoir. If you've got your seabed and you're then building your retaining wall, which will be covered in rock armor. Now, you've got tide going in and out. So what you do is your base layer, you put large boulders. So you've got a sort of free draining base layer. You then put a blinding layer of, hopefully, of relatively stable material, demolition rubble. Stuff that's relatively inert.
Okay.
And then you put your next layer of medium toxicity. If this is your tidal range, that's the other thing you've got to remember. And it's, but your nastiest stuff you tend to put in the very top layer, and then you put a layer of topsoil over the top. Now, unfortunately, of course, you get rainwater coming through, so you've got percolation through that. But that upper layer tends to be your really nastiest one. And that's generally most affected by high spring tides. If you do an excavation to build your basement, what happens is the hydraulic pressure, the water comes in at the bottom, rushes up through the column, and it can then wash out from the sides of the hole. And it can get very easily at the most toxic and nasty and unpleasant stuff, which it then dissolves. And then when the tide goes out, it whooshes it all the way out again.
So that was the issue with the horizon then?
That was the issue with the energy from waste plant, with the incinerator, 10 years ago.
Yeah.
This is the other thing that's so frustrating. They committed exactly the same crime in 2009 as they did in 2018, as 19.
Wow.
And they'd been hauled up for it, they'd been warned, and what's frustrating, and which we're trying now to get legal advice when we can afford it, there are several of the same officers still working for the states who were responsible for the pollution and denied it back then. And the incinerator was great because there they were actually discharging straight out to Grève des Aix, which is the Ramsar area. From the Elizabeth Marina, at least it's washing round,
yeah.
So it's getting diluted.
Yeah.
But down at La Colette, they were just pumping straight into a marine protected reservation.
And this was 9 years after it was... Like,
this was 2009.
Yeah.
And, I mean, they're still in denial. What they don't realise was that there were people...
And so,
there were whistleblowers, there were people who went on site, took samples, and, you know, had all the evidence.
And they haven't been able to sort of say maybe like apology or a statement regarding the fallout, the effects they have having on the Ramsar area next to it.
No.
Wow, that is very interesting.
And they didn't report that to the Ramsar Bureau in Geneva as they're meant to, because they've come up with this wonderful excuse, and that is that Jersey has joined Ramsar but under the umbrella of the UK. So if the states of Jersey are forced to file a report, they send it to the Department of Ag and Fish in the UK, or DEFRA I think it is now, and DEFRA will generally file it and bury it and not do anything.
Wait.
Because they can't be bothered with pissy little place like Jersey. You know, they've got bigger issues, which is reasonable.
Yes.
There is nothing, and people have... Dave Cabaldew knows several of the people in the bureau in Switzerland. He's made contact directly. There is nothing to stop Jersey reporting directly to Switzerland.
Yes.
But by putting the British government in as an extra protective layer, it means that one lot of civil servants possibly is protecting another lot of civil servants.
Yeah. So do you believe that the Ramsar Bureau probably had like an idea of what's going on, or do you believe it's still like?
They knew exactly what's going on. I mean, Dave Cabaldew is a very good researcher, and he has put together a number of papers detailing every aspect of this, and those papers have gone to, you know, everybody in government and whatever. So no one can claim that they didn't know.
Wow, that's very, very interesting.
I mean, the big spring tides last week.
Yeah.
One of my friends who lives in Castle Quay and one of our very active members, so he takes a lot of photographs because his balcony overlooks the building site.
Yeah.
So he took some photos and some videos of it filling up as the tide came in and emptying out as the tide went out, clearly showing hydraulic flushing, and fired it off. He got onto the environment hotline and said, "Ooh, this is, you know." And a lady from there got back and thanked him very much for being concerned and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And she and a colleague had been down there at whatever it was, 11 o'clock on the morning until 11:58, and they'd taken a stroll round and they had seen minimal evidence of solids, suspended solids in the water and things, and they saw some shrimp swimming around, so they think that's all okay.
And well, they must have, after, I was sure maybe after the court case that they must have been like forced to oblige to like stop that the flushing happening.
Appears not. Anyway, so I'm now, later today, I'm going to write back to her and say that her response has been copied to me by John. And I'm just going to say, you know, that, and I'm going to copy it to John Young, the minister, and a couple of others. And I'm just going to say that, you know, taking a stroll round the marina and saying that, oh, there was, the water wasn't too mucky, therefore it's safe, you know, is about as unscientific as you can get. You know, you need to take samples, as we did.
Yeah.
We also took a control sample down by the entrance of the marina where we knew we had fresh ingress of seawater and things. You know, we used proper scientific things. Having asked and got advice from the state's analyst as to how was the best way to take our samples, you know, so... Yeah, we did it all properly.
Yeah.
And not only did we log it, but we had photographic evidence of doing it.
Yeah.
So this lady's sort of basically said, oh yes, me and my chum had a wander around. We saw a couple of little bits, but you know, nothing to worry about. And so yes, it seems to be all fine.
No, that's a good sort of baseline or story I can put into it. Another thing...
I've got no qualms, actually, about forwarding you her email. If you want to embarrass the government, feel free.
Well, that's sort of... It's going to be sort of like an attempt at expose, sort of panorama sort of type thing.
Cool.
For it. So, yeah, and I, again, it was sort of this sort of shellfish and the sort of leak from the construction that sort of got me interested.
Mm.
And from Jackie led me to you. And I think... Vaguely, what I have heard as well, that that Grevesett sort of bay used to be, previous when the reclamation site was made, that was quite like a tourist hotspot as well on that beach.
Oh, yes.
Yes, and so...
Oh, yes, Havre Park, Grevesett were, yeah. That's...
And it's lately, I think, well, I, without, I, and the thing I'm trying to like push as well without like sort of evidence that due to the, like that reclamation site, it took away like a great like hotspot as well.
It has certainly blighted that part of the coastline in terms of attraction for tourists.
Yeah.
There are other factors like the massive loss of traditional guest houses.
Yeah.
Along, because a lot of the people who used to go on the beach were staying in guest houses.
Yeah.
In the area. They've all been converted into apartments or whatever. There used to be a lot more hotels. I mean, that was almost sort of a Riviera strip along there, and now you've got Victor Hugo apartments and all of these other developments, so there's no longer the resident tourist population, so you've got to weigh that against, you know, it's not just a you built a reclamation site and an ugly power station and then an incinerator and that drove all the people away. The whole lack of strategic thinking in terms of island development allowed all of those hotels, all of that tourist accommodation to be lost. So you didn't have the people on their doorsteps with a lovely beach. But certainly I don't think anything that they've done at La Colette has enhanced the tourist offering.
So... Is there any other sort of like concerns besides like the waterfront and the Colette in terms of like marine environment that you have, like the organization?
Well, there are a number. I mean, in the larger scale, I was involved in a working group back in 2009, 2010, which involved Jersey, Guernsey, Normandy, and Brittany. And the goal then, and the French still aspire to it, but needless to say, we've screwed it up over here, to form a transnational marine park, basically going from Cap de la Hague across to the Casquets, round Guernsey to the Roche d'Ouvre, and then down to the Ile de Bréhat. So an expanded Gulf of St. Malo where there's the fishing agreement. And the French were really clever about this, because if it was set up as an international marine reserve, marine park, then it outbids or outranks all of the EU regulations, because it then falls under, as it were, World Heritage rules. And one of the motivations was that would then allow the Normans, the Bretons, Jersey and Guernsey to completely control all of the fisheries. And the Bretons are pissed off that they're getting increasing numbers of Spanish and Portuguese fishing boats coming up and starting. They've had them in Biscay for years, but now they're starting to come around the corner.
Oh, wow.
And the Normans are getting pissed off because Belgian, Dutch and Danish ships are coming down the north from the North Sea. And we're all pissed off because we're getting increasing numbers of English boats coming over.
Yeah.
So if you have this marine national international park, you can stop all of that. So you can manage the resources, but also by setting it up as a proper park, you're encouraging massive amounts and diversity of long-term marine research.
And so well, so the main aim is that sort of just the stop lack of fishing stocks, is it? Or
it was to preserve fishing stocks. It was also to come up with a common baseline plan for the economic exploitation. So setting levels for recreational use, for tourism and whatever. It was also to provide a framework within which everybody would work for renewable energy exploitation. To set up a very large scale temperate zone intertidal area research area.
Wow.
Which doesn't, you know, there are lots of marine protected areas and whatever around the place and around the coast of the UK and whatever. But the scale of this, and because of our tidal range and the range of marine life and activity, so, you know, we could be in quite an interesting position. We're in almost like a Goldilocks zone.
Yeah.
You know, that everything is not too hot, not too cold. Yeah. You know. And so, yes, in terms of research for temperate climate zones and for tidal waters. But anyway, Jersey and Guernsey ended up having a bit of a squabble, and then just as we were getting that sorted out, the French had a general election and Brittany and Normandy went back to fighting each other as they've done for long, long time. But there are still people working on it, and yeah, I think actually it's one of the really weird possible side effects of Brexit, in that it may be easier for Jersey and Guernsey to talk directly to Normandy and Brittany. So long as we don't tell Westminster what we're doing.
So I'm guessing was it sort of like first initial your understanding of like sort of building it, sort of like buildings and how the construction of the reclamation was maybe that beginning of the 2000s. That was that when it sort of gained your attention?
Gosh, I suppose, yes. No, it was back in the 1990s. We started the reclamation site. That started in about 96, I think.
Okay. And was it sort of like...
I think it was back in the 90s. Well, there were a lot of people who were deeply concerned at the whole concept of it. And, I mean, one example, unintended but anticipated consequence, you know, the sea letters that we get in St. Albans Bay.
Yeah.
Now, that is an algae. And that requires specific conditions of water temperature, nutrition level, and flow rates to grow, to survive.
Yeah.
Previously, we had negligible levels of it because the anti-clockwise tidal flow, which exists in the bay, meant that the water moved just fast enough to maintain a scouring effect. So that prevented the algae. It also meant that because the volume of the water circulating and the speed, it also meant that the temperature stayed low. And then the third factor was that even though we were probably putting twice as much nitrates in the runoff from Bellazan and all the streams, but because of the extra water flow, the dilution effect was taking that out to sea. When they put the reclamation site in, especially the west of Albert, they've created a choke point in the small roads between Elizabeth Castle. So you get a much restricted flow. So up in the bay, the water circulation is much slower, so there's no scouring. If the water moves more slowly, it's got time to warm up. And even though, as I say, half the level of nitrates are going into the bay as used to, but because they're moving slowly, so they're there long enough to attract the algae. So you've got all three factors have been affected by the reclamation. And that could have been properly predicted and anticipated if they had done the full tidal modelling. When they went ahead and did it, they put tidal flow buoys around. They got the data and said, "Oh yeah, well that looks fine," you know. But no one then actually was prepared to pay.
Yes.
To have the computer modelling done as to what would happen if you constricted it.
So we start having the sea letters in the 1990s.
Sea letters took a few years to kick in. I don't recall the sea letters being a major issue until probably, I don't know, 2005, 2007, somewhere around there.
Okay.
Because it takes a while.
Yeah.
You know, you've got an ecological change, an environmental change, and when you've got species moving into a new niche, you know, it takes them a while to get to a critical mass. So even though there would have been residual patches of algae from historical times, and that they would have been releasing spores and everything into the water, but that was being dissipated. So it takes a while, and then you've got a tipping point, which I don't know exactly what it is for Jersey, for St. Albans Bay, but you then get an algal bloom, and you get them in the open ocean. And that's when, boof, you know, it explodes. And that's where then everybody goes, why the hell is the whole beach green?
Yeah.
When it's only a few strands and things, and it's one of these weird things that depends on your angle of view. If you look down on a beach from a reasonably high point, you're looking more at the beach and seeing the sand. If you go down onto beach level, you're looking along, and then suddenly what looked like sand is suddenly all green.
Yeah.
You know, it's very much your viewing angle. But no, when we had the algal blooms, I mean, it didn't matter where you looked at it from, even if it was outer space, it was still all bloody green.
Okay, so that's all, that's, yeah. So the base, so at the moment, it's all, that's really good, because then it like sort of, then I can sort of link that as well. So it like, as if it is actually creating a whole story here, this whole issue.
Jersey went ahead with reclamation, which on many levels makes and made a lot of sense. But we penny pinched. We didn't do proper research and modelling. And we do this time and time and time again. Someone decided energy from waste, the incinerator, oh, La Colette's the best place to stick it. Let's spend millions of pounds getting a very expensive architect to make a big rectangular box to put it in. Now, I'm told by engineers who know these things that actually it could have been made much lower. It would have been spread over a larger area, but it wouldn't have been impinging on the sight line, on the skyline. But no one actually sort of thought it through. It's like, yeah, we'll put it there. And then, oh yeah, well, let's make it a nice big box, and then it's all sort of squished in. And that's the problem. There isn't this continuity, there isn't the long-term strategic thinking.
Right, okay.
And actually, that is one of the sort of key things that we're trying to encourage and engender with the whole Earth Project Jersey thing.
Yeah.
Is getting people not only to be environmentally friendly and sustainable, but to think way into the future.
Yeah.
To develop long-term plans.
Yeah, because I think I saw on, like, well, from SOS again, that we don't have our own environmental sort of independent reviewer either, which is pretty poor, because then no one's upholding the government.
The environment department used to, the environment part of the planning and environment used to be fairly autonomous and fairly independent. And no, the civil service decided that was terribly, terribly bad. So that's why it all got subsumed into growth, housing and environment. And it means that effectively the chief officer, who's just resigned, John Rogers, the growth part is the Jersey Development Company. So they come up with an idea to build something and go to him, and he says, oh yeah, that's a brilliant idea. And then they ask for planning permission and regulatory control through environment. And he looks at it and says, oh, well, that's going to make us lots of money. Don't put any restrictions on them. So he is actually the chief officer of GHE, is the applicant and the regulator. Now, if that isn't the most blatant conflict, and how anybody can think that that is remotely in the public interest, is truly stunning.
So, has that been done recently, or how like it's been done?
Oh, this is all courtesy of the great god Charlie Parker. Yes, this is the new reformed government of Jersey, and so effectively where we used to have. Well, growth is now in the process of being taken away from that department.
Yeah.
So growth was economic development, Lyndon Farnham as one minister.
Yeah.
Housing, completely different minister, Sam Mezek. Environment, a third minister, John Young. And then infrastructure, which is also squeezed in there, which is a fourth minister, Kevin Lewis. And basically you had four elected ministers who had been separated from the departments which they were elected to run. Sorry, that's going off into political. Yeah. But so now there are, you know, growth, the economic side of it has been sort of wrenched away. And people are just saying, you know, you cannot squeeze all these things. This is a model that is unsound.
Yeah.
You cannot have an applicant and a regulator who are controlled by the same person.
That is pretty mad.
I think that's coming on to your second series of documentaries.
The political side.
Yeah.
Let me just check what else. So what are you looking for in terms of like to help better secure the safety of the Ramsar area along the St. Clement coast?
I suppose the simplest thing is just getting Jersey to comply with the obligations to which we signed up, and to do it openly and publicly and directly to Bureau headquarters in Switzerland without, you know, deliberately sending it to the UK in the hope that it would get filed away and never seen again.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's do what we signed up to do. You know, it's the rules are all there. The manual is there. Just open it, read it, and follow it. But because the Ramsar Management Group, because the funding effectively comes from government, and you've got a number of civil servants involved from fisheries and whatever, they are pressured to not rock the boat. So, you know, they've spent over a year discussing the design of signs to go up on all the slipways to tell people in 75 different languages that they're just entering a Ramsar site.
Yeah.
And these are the rules and this is what it means. But not one of the 41 instances of raw sewerage being pumped into Half Day Par or St. Obin's in the last year. It's only 1 year's tally. Not one of those has been reported.
And was that the
off island?
Oh, I forgot what it's called again. It's like when it's just like loads of those like sort of chunky like plastics that when they were all like spewed out half their part like recently just last year. Was that a result of that?
That was raw sewerage.
Wow.
There may have been the odd bit of plastic in the form of baby wipes or whatever.
Yeah, that's.
Yeah, that. But no, basically that was raw untreated sewerage. And the same has happened in St. Obin's Bay.
Have they not made probably like a new strategy to sort of divert it from that area?
Oh, the main cause of it was lack of investment. The states of Jersey has spent no money on maintenance and upkeep of infrastructure over the last 20 years. They haven't spent any money. I mean, this is where they make all this fuss about the hospital. Yeah. The last time they spent substantial money on the hospital was 1989 when they opened the parade wing, the new wing. And then they said, right, well, we've spent all that money. We don't need to bother about the hospital for next. And yeah, so even though there was an ongoing refurbishment and modernization plan for the hospital that was bought and paid for, the NHS advisors, who were really shit hot, had come up with a modular design that would have, if it had been followed, would have taken 20 odd years to put in place. But once done, would have given us everything we needed projected forward for the next 75 years.
And they didn't accept it?
No. They filed it and just... So this is where you've... The new sewerage works in Bellazan, which is fabulous and wonderful and state of the art.
Yeah.
That is due to come online, I think it's next year. 2021, I think it is.
Okay.
That will be super fabulous and wonderful.
Right.
And as part of that, you've got the new pumping station at First Tower and the new pumping station down at Grove d'Azet. So they won't be pumping into the sea anymore because they'll be pumping into the sewage works that's got the capacity to take everything that's being there. So there is a solution on the horizon. But the issue is that they never complied with the rule, the reporting rules, for their previous transgressions.
Yeah. Okay. I'm trying to sort of like visualize all these points. So I think
it's a very big interconnected picture. Yeah. I mean, I'm full of admiration that you're trying to draw it all together into a coherent pattern.
Yeah. So at the moment, I'm trying to do chronologically, as like sort of Lacolette was the first thing. And would you think that you're probably better to speak to about that or the Warfront issue?
I can give you some background. I can try and help you and point you in directions for the older stuff. The current pollution down at the Elizabeth Marina and the Horizon is, yes, I was down there. I was on the telly and being filmed taking water samples and, you know, so yeah, I was sort of in the thick of it. So that, yeah, I'm happy talking about things of which I have first-hand knowledge.
Okay, and so do you know anyone about sort of about the Lacolette then site?
The longer-term history, we need to get you, Dave Cabaldew's most recent, the short history of fuck-ups in Jersey or whatever. No, he called it that. But no, but I mean, he's recently produced another paper, which sets out a lot of the context. And he did do a while ago. He did another paper, so that went back. So those two would give you the full sort of historical narrative, and so yeah, as source documents, I think they would be they would be very useful.
Hopefully, I don't know, I'd hope that it'd be maybe like free, because what had happened originally when I did like a previous project, I was supposed to, when I talked to him, we had a very faulty kit that I wasn't made aware of, and it decided to die straight on site. And I think, fair enough to him, he wasn't very like bothered to come back or like try a full interview with me. And then he said, yeah, you can talk to Jackie. Was very nice, which I respect. But
I'll go back and talk to David and tell him that, yeah, he's got to give you another chance.
Yeah. So at the moment, I think I'd like to sort of like chronologically start off sort of like the Lacolette, as that was sort of the beginning.
Yeah.
And then more recently, sort of pinned out as if like, so Jersey needed energy, somewhere to put all this, so put it there. And then as times went on, and the way it was constructed was quite laissez-faire and sort of wasn't completely very understanding of the environment it was around. Even, I mean, it was the 70s, but still I think it's fair enough to sort of like say that they may as well like try to make some development in like sort of the future about it. And then,
oh, come on, I mean, when they started talking about it, you know, Greenpeace was in existence, Friends of the Earth had been formed, you know. No, there was an ample sufficiency of knowledge of things environmental. There was enough science and research, published research papers and things out there.
Okay. Yes.
You know, if you want to find out about stuff, or wanted in those days to find out,
yeah.
Okay, we didn't have the internet of everything, but, you know, there were still means of carrying out proper research.
Yeah.
Okay. But if you can't be bothered or don't want to know, or are worried that the answers that you may get are not what you wish.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got to remember that within government, especially within a civil service, there is a very strong element of analysing your questions very carefully in anticipation of getting the wrong answer. Because if you don't ask the question, then you can legitimately say that you were unaware that if you carried out this action, you were going to poison 10,000 people. If you've asked the question, is there any potential danger, and someone has come back and said, potentially you could kill 10,000 people, you're screwed, because it's on record, the question has been asked. But if you go round and you say, might this have an adverse effect on butterflies or something, and someone comes back and says, no, won't have any effect on them at all. So you can say that you looked into possible environmental effects.
Yes.
And were not made aware of anything harmful.
Yeah.
Now, you've got the same scenario, but it's a matter of, you know, what questions you ask.
Yeah. Is that what you're saying about what questions I ask? Maybe like well, official.
It's you've got to think of this is the mindset of the civil service when they're pushing forward a project like this.
Yeah.
So there's a disincentive to ask awkward or potentially awkward questions or questions like that. So if you are mindful of that when you're asking your questions,
yeah,
it may help you to identify where gaps, errors, deliberate decisions were made.
Mm.
I mean, there was one of the senior engineers that I've been told about who was consulted on the original design for our reclamation site. There was a Dutch company that we used and an American company, and this guy was a retired general from the American Corps of Engineers. Now, I mean, these are the guys that build the levees to stop the Mississippi, you know, flooding half of the southern states of America. So this is, you know,
yeah,
serious engineering. You know, this is civil engineering on a huge scale. And yeah, so when people like that are asked and they say, well, if I was going to do it, I wouldn't do it that way.
Yeah.
You might listen to them.
Okay.
We as normal people might listen to them.
Yeah.
If you're only concerned about getting something done is do it as cheaply as possible, then it's a different set of, you know, different set of criteria.
And so they went to those two companies and asked for advice, and then they were like, don't do it like this.
There were various civil engineering companies that were being asked to do various bits of research and things over here. And then they started going off island and consulting, tracking down people who knew. I mean, let's face it, you know, half the Netherlands used to be under the sea.
Yeah.
So if you want to do land reclamation, they're the best people in the world to talk to.
Yeah.
They weren't the first point of contact from the States of Jersey, because the States of Jersey went to chat to their chums in civil engineering in England. That's the way they work.
Mm. And do you know if they like maybe like give them a letter? Because I'm just like maybe thinking like that would be useful to put in, like, as if, you know, it was known from the start that this was like a wrong idea.
I would wish you luck, but I doubt if there's any. No. I think the state's filing system will have successfully sanitized anything, any records like that.
Ah, shame.
Yeah. And if you tried doing a freedom of information, they would probably say that the cost of that, the manpower cost of that, would be excessive, because they'd have to go back through their archives. And they'd still come back and say, sorry, there's nothing in the archives. Yeah. No, that's going to be tricky. And the problem is that by tracking down and interviewing people who were there at the time or might have been involved, but without hard evidence in black and white,
yeah,
it can be fobbed off as hearsay.
Yeah.
Or wild allegations of lunatic environmentalists, you know, sort of thing. So, I think you've got to be realistic and accept that you're not going to get, you're very unlikely to get anything, unless you put social media appeal out and something in the press to say, does anybody have any papers or any involvement or recollection with the early decision-making processes for the La Collette and West of Albert reclamations?
Yeah, okay, that does look like a bit of a loose cannon, but...
Well, it is, but you see, again, you're more likely to have civilians who've got stuff that they haven't thrown away.
That is true.
What's your timescale on this, though? Because that could take you...
Yeah, it's got to be handed by the end of May, so...
Shit!
Yeah.
Oh, you ain't going to have time to do anything like that. No, okay, fine. Right, what can I do to help? I will fire through... I'll have a nice word with Dave Cabaldew and tell him he's got to be nice to speak to you again. If we're going to do filming, it might be worth looking at trying to work out a way of doing the two of us together. So I'll drag him along and then stand by the door so he can't run away while you film him, and then he can run away and you can film me or something like that.
Yeah.
But in terms of research papers, certainly what he has written is the most learned and the most carefully researched. And he has published them, so, yeah. We can let you have the copies of the test, the water samples from the Elizabeth Marina.
Yeah.
Could probably let you have copies of the various bland emails from the government, basically saying, don't worry, we know what we're doing, trust us.
Yeah, that would be very good to burn.
Well, especially as I've got a quite recent one from Tim Defew, who's head of environment, saying, oh yes, we're sure that they're doing everything that we asked them to. Like you didn't decide to impose far more stringent testing regimes or introduce regular checks or... No, okay.
yeah.
And he's the head of environmental protection. You know, I mean, it is that profoundly worrying that we are perceived as people who are interfering with the ability of others to make money and stick up buildings. You know, if Lee Henry and Jersey Development Company had been made to spend an extra £2 or 3 million on preparatory groundworks and to do it properly, that £2 or 3 million would come straight off their profits. And their bonuses and salaries are dependent upon their profits. Because that's the way, even though they're owned by the government, that's the way it was set up. Yeah.
Shady shit.
Which is the same with Andium Homes. You know, Andium want to go and build lots and lots of flats because they've been told to, because they're now effectively the housing department.
Yeah.
And they build the same rectilinear boring boxes. And trying to engage with them about adopting the most environmentally and sustainably high standards. Nah. I mean, the new gasworks development, they're putting the cabling, the infrastructure in for, at some later date, putting solar panels on the roof.
Okay.
But they haven't got the money in the budget to put the solar panels up when they build it from new. Now, I've never heard of any development company that has gone back a few years later and said, oh, we've got some spare money, let's go and put some solar panels on that building.
Wow.
So,
yes.
Does that give you help, oversight, insight?
Yeah.
And, yeah, whatever you could think of, I will definitely... copy Dave Cabaldew in and I'll pull out his reports and forward them to you.
That's great, thank you very much for that. Yeah. If you're, I think It'd be great. It's nice. I did probably like for time's sake as well. YouTube, but I think in terms of what I'm going to be told to do is to say like it'd probably be better to have Dave talking about Lacollet, have David Lacollet. If you're talking about Waterfront, have you maybe like near the Waterfront. That's sort of the idea. So just to let you know.
Cool.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So I'll probably patch all that up and re-go from what we talked about and then sort of have an idea how to put this all into visual context.
Marvellous.
Yes.
God, you're going to have to